AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday. Good to be back with you today. Matt and Patrick here. Hopefully, Secretary of State Steve Simon going to be joining us as Democrat of the Day here in a little bit, as a lot of things coming up in the next 24 hours. And actually probably going to be into the week before we have some answers in the state. We'll get to that all with him here in just a little bit. Patrick, what in the world? I got back this morning. I was up on the range. What in the world happened down around the southwest part of the metro?
Well, there was a big thunderstorm that rolled through late last night. It sounded like it was a very slow-moving thing that just wrecked stuff.
Well, okay. I'll go with that definition. Holy cow, man. A lot of leaves down. At first, I thought I was driving on the streets near my house, and I'm like, did a truck come in here and clip these branches, and that's why all these leaves are on the ground? And I was like, oh, it was the hail last night. And, yes, I did see some of the images that were put out there. I hope everyone's okay by the grace of God, because I was parked. I went up north. My other car was – the other car we had was parked in the garage, so we got lucky on that one. But a lot of branches down. Some of my flowers got knocked around. My dahlias kind of took a hit, but what am I going to do? I did spend some time up on the range, and it was interesting on two fronts. First of all, we talked a little bit about this psychopath that's running for a House seat. She's a Mountain Iron city councilwoman who basically used Holocaust imagery to try to say that her having to wear a face mask is akin to the Jews having to wear the Star of David to identify themselves during Nazi times, which is just ludicrous. No, we're trying to save your life by wearing masks. And I've said this before, and I even had one or two snarky conservatives. Well, where was your condemnation when the Democrats were calling W. Bush a Nazi? Where was that, Matt? And I'll be honest, I was very condemning of it. And the reason why is this. Hitler was Hitler. Nazis were Nazis. The Holocaust was the Holocaust. If every time you feel there's a grand injustice, I got a speeding ticket, it's like the Holocaust. Not only have you basically taken your minor inconvenience and turned it into one of the greatest humanitarian travesties ever, which is out of line. You wearing a face mask during a pandemic in a private business is not violating your rights. It's trying to save your damn stupid life. How about we say it like that? But on the other side of it, it diminishes what really happened there. And yeah, in turn, by basically comparing every petty little thing that you're angry about to the Holocaust, you're diminishing the true nature of the Holocaust, and henceforth dismissing and diminishing what truly happened, the horrible tragedy that happened to the Jewish people, for goodness sakes. So, yeah, I've been very critical. You don't do this. And I'll be the first to say, hey, you know, Trump and his crew seem to cosplay Hitler, especially during the beer hall push days. There seems a lot of that. I'm waiting for a Kristallnacht cosplay to start up here. But they, you know, and my whole argument is if you're only cosplaying this stuff, shouldn't you take off the Vulcan ears every now and then? Just kind of my mentality. Anyway, she came on up, and the Minnesota GOP, which is embarrassed because this is who votes for the Republicans right now, is anti-Semitic and racist, bigoted fools. It's not all Republicans, but there's a lot of them that vote Republican. But they don't want to have to, you know, deal with this. So for like the third or fourth time this election cycle, the Minnesota GOP had to kind of cement, no, let's not use Holocaust imagery to complain about having to wear a face mask. Well, this councilwoman who's running for a Minnesota House seat, she basically came on out and said, I was forced to apologize. I don't really apologize. This is just like the Holocaust, to which about 30 people, 30 bigoted, jackassy and anti-Semitic people in the Mountain Iron area were like, yay. I will say this, having been up in that area, There is a lot of people that is not resonating for her. If this is how she thinks she's going to win this House seat, it's backfiring spectacularly. Because even the Mesabi Daily News, which is one of the most conservative newspapers I've even seen, even they, on their Saturday edition, had a long story of why you don't use the Holocaust just to throw about because you're angry about something. And so, yeah, if this idea was this was somehow going to, be able to get, she was able going to be able to use this to fuel her campaign. You're going to get 30 or so votes from the bigots of Mountain Iron, and that's about it. And and it's a shame because I've been to Mountain Iron. I know people that live from Mountain Iron. I don't know what the heck's happened to that town, but that town has definitely gotten. And I'm not going to pull punches on that. Also, I did want to make sure I take some time here to talk about another thing that's been going on up there, which is Pete Stauber. This is the Republican representative for the Minnesota 8th District. And as I was driving back today, this morning, there's a big billboard, I think, right out. Is that North Branch? He's rather like, Pete Stauber, fighting for Minnesota 8. Dude. You promised mining jobs. The mining jobs have not come back. And we're not talking about. And first of all, let me make sure we understand the situation pre-coronavirus on the range. Some miners are returning to work in an industry that's made a comeback in recent years, shipping out 37 million tons of taconite to steelmakers in 2017. But that may have been they may have been able to weather economic tailouts in the past. At least 1,600 mining jobs, or 25%, have vanished from the region over the two decades. So he was promising 16 of these jobs. We're going to bring back mining jobs, which would be if you're going to do that. 1,600 mining jobs is what your bellwether is. We're going to bring back that's if you're promising that, Stubby, if you're promising you're going to bring back mining jobs, you're saying you're going to bring back the 1,600 mining jobs. Between March 16th and June 14th, at least 27,244 people in St. Louis County filed for unemployment, about 26.4% of the labor force, according to the Minnesota Department of Economic Employment and Economic Development. As of Thursday, at least 30,336 people in the county, or 29.4% of the labor force, had sought out unemployment, and the majority of workers affected were food and beverage services, just like here in the metro area, construction trades, as well as also in the mining industry. The mining industry, they're starting to bring some people back, but they're even admitting they're bringing people back even though they have cases of coronavirus within the staff that is there. The layoffs have been pretty bad. In mid-April, Cleveland Cliffs became the first mining company to have an operation fall as the company announced it'd be idling North Shore Mining in Silver Bay and Babbitt until August. At least 470 of its 570 employees were laid off. The following day, U.S. Steel representatives said they would idle the Keetac mine and the processing plant in Keewatin. Planted in Keewatin and lay off 375 of its 423 employees. And next up, Hibbing Taconite, run by Accelerator Metal, made public its to closure. About 650 employees were laid off. Then U.S. Steel owned Mintac became the fourth of six mines on the range to say it would lay off workers, although the mine would still operate. At least 260 employees were without jobs. Some of those workers are going back. It should be noted that the U.S. Steel-owned Keewatin Taconite plant on the Iron Range said they will continue to collect unemployment and be idle for the time being. 340 of 380 workers there will be unemployed for the time being. So not only have we not gotten those 1,600 jobs back, we're at a net loss still with this. And here's the hits just keep on coming here. U.S. Steel representatives said in an earnings call that two of its blast furnaces will remain shut down for the remainder of the year. You're not opening up that mine then, because the last thing you're going to do is stockpile a bunch of taconite, steel pellets. You're not going to stockpile a whole bunch of them just so the price goes down. That one mine's not going to open up again. So as of right now, and by the way, and we haven't even talked about how the negative effects of the tariffs on the steel trade have really impacted that area as well. But needless to say, hey, Stubby, Pete Stauber, Minnesota A congressman, you promised these Minnesota miner jobs back. You promised them. Where are the jobs, Pete? You kept making out, we're going to bring the mining back here. And don't get me wrong, I know you would turn every neighboring lake to your lake into a sulfur pit as long as you could basically campaign of, I brought in toxic mining jobs, aren't I great? I get that. That is who you are, dude. I've seen your record. But you have failed spectacularly about this. You have failed. This was your key point. I'm bringing back mining. This was your whole thing. You have failed horribly. On top of that, by the way, I should mention New Yorker. If you didn't see the New Yorker story, I'll post it later on. 4 years ago, Trump promised to reverse economic decline for the family farmers. Hillary Clinton wants to shut down family farms just like she wants to shut down mines and steelworkers, he said during a campaign stop at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. We're going to end this war on the American farmer. In early 2018, he launched a series of trade wars which provoked China, Mexico, Canada, and the European Union into imposing penalties on American dairy products. Mexico, the largest importer of Wisconsin cheese, leveled 25% tariff on American cheese last summer. Trump allotted $15 billion. Most of that, though, went to large corporate farms. Very little of that went to the ma-and-pa farmer that he claims and Pete Stauber claims to be representing. And in the tweet, he called farmers great patriots, promised them they would eventually be better off in June. By the way, you're not. No, he's wiped out your trade markets. Pretty much you're screwed. That being said, in June, as Trump's poll numbers dropped nationwide, the Washington Post reported that his campaign advisors were losing hope for Michigan and Pennsylvania and would focus on holding Wisconsin. It's baked into the cake that Trump will lose the state's largest metro areas in a landslide while the suburbs have been fleeing him, said Bed Winkler, the head of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Trump cannot win a second term unless up to enormous margins in rural Wisconsin. Now, I want to make sure we all understand one thing about what's coming up here in this election. There are a lot of Republicans who are out of work, who were promised jobs by Trump and Pete Stauber and these guys. They were promised jobs, and they can draw a direct line from point A to point B that the reason their job is gone is because of Donald Trump and Pete Stauber enabling Trump. They can draw that line, and they'll still vote for Trump because they are brainwashed, and owning the libs is the only thing that matters to them. Family farmers, dairy farmers. There are tons of dairy farmers. I've talked to farmers directly who have said, oh, yeah, my pork markets have been wiped out. My corn markets are gone. My dairy markets are history. And this is playing out across the country. And they'll still vote for them. Because even though the farm might get foreclosed, even though they'll lose everything, they'll lose the family farm they've had for 150 years, they'll lose everything. They're brainwashed into thinking the only thing that matters is owning the libs, and then if Trump doesn't win, that somehow the libs win. And I don't know how, outside of these people having complete and total economic ruin at the hands of the Republicans, or dying of coronavirus at the hands of Republicans because they're too stupid to wear a damn mask, I don't know what else it's going to take. But reminder, this upcoming election is not about getting Republicans to vote for Democrats. That will not happen. It will not happen. This election is about getting that 110 million registered voters who decided they had something better to do when Donald Trump was on the ballot in 2016, get them to the polls in November. Because these people are sycophants. I have no idea how in the world you could go out there and watch some guy, how you could have Donald Trump knee you repeatedly in the groin and say, isn't he great? I have no idea how you guys keep doing it, but you keep doing it. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll get the Minnesota coronavirus update. And hopefully we'll have Steve Simon, Secretary of State, very busy today. So it's kind of, fingers crossed we get Steve. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Tangled in one bunk because we can't see. Even though these are challenging times, All Energy Solar is still committed to providing you a cost-effective, environmentally friendly energy system through their zero-contact protocol. Solar remains a great value and long-term investment, but some of the incentive programs will be expiring soon. All Energy Solar can walk you through the entire process. They can evaluate your property by phone or webinar, and can even complete preliminary design work without visiting your home. So start saving on your energy bill today and visit allenergysolar.com.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Join us for New Beginnings, Saturday mornings at 11, brought to you in part by Vision Loss Resources.
Being in the Army National Guard is about more than serving your country. It's about being there for your community when your neighbors need you most. The Army National Guard makes college affordable, and serving part-time can help you graduate debt-free. Do you want to stay close to friends and family? The Guard allows you to serve close to home. Serving part-time in the Army National Guard lets you have the life you want. Learn more by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
When you need legal assistance, let the Minnesota Lawyer and Referral Information Service help you find the right attorney. It's a new and enhanced program of the Hennepin and Ramsey County Bar Associations. They have professional, experienced referral counselors who can connect you to vetted attorneys practicing in employment, real estate, wills, taxes, and much more. Take the stress out of finding a lawyer. Call 612-752-6699 or go to mnlawyerreferral.org. The right call for the right lawyer.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Yeah, I was paying attention to the coronavirus numbers while I was up north. It's not good. As a matter of fact, I was in St. Louis County, which has been having the highest outbreaks lately of coronavirus per average in the state. And obviously Duluth is part of that, but still, I mean, we're still waiting for the downfall of that Effie Rodeo. Yeah, Effie Rodeo is right. Minnesota had reported more than 2,300 infections with the novel coronavirus over the last 3 days. The level of viral activity that approximates the first peak of the pandemic in the state in late May. The three-day total includes 625 lab-confirmed infections reported Monday by the Minnesota Department of Health. A reminder, that's because generally the weekends are a lighter time. The state also reported three additional deaths from COVID-19, and 320 people were hospitalized with the infectious disease as of Monday. That included 159 people who needed intensive care. Those numbers, once again, keep going up. And everyone's like, hey, we don't need masks anymore, Republicans. We're impervious to a disease because we vote Republican. Yeah, idiots. Now, that's ever since they started screaming that, we've seen the hospitalizations go up, intensive care go up. Oh, Matt, why are you just about spoiled grapes? This is just sour grapes. Spoiled grapes? Sour grapes. It's sour grapes, Matt. That's all you are, sour grapes. No, I am not going to allow you to be idiots. You want to go be idiots, go by yourself in a room, be as idiot as you want to be, but stop being idiots everywhere else. I mean, you guys are just being morons. I mean, it's insanity enough that you have a bunch of people who listen to health experts and say, I know better than them. Ding! But then it's crazier on top of it that you guys keep using Holocaust imagery to basically try to make it seem like you're really victims. Wow. Deaths of the COVID-19 have not increased. That's the good news, as the state has not reported any double-digit losses and fatalities since July 2nd. But health officials fear that could be a result from the rise in confirmed infections and recent uptick in cases, more among residents of staff of long-term care facilities is particularly of concern. Some of the increases in confirmed cases has come through a more diagnostic testing, as many infections produce mild or no symptoms and can otherwise go undetected. However, the positivity rate of diagnostic tests has risen over about 5%, is approaching 6%, an indication that the virus is spreading more broadly than it had been in the past. The rate of infections with unknown sources in the community transmission remained at 34% on Monday. according to the state's COVID-19 dashboard. What was it? 100,000 kids have tested positive for coronavirus in the last few weeks. Isn't it the last few weeks? I think it is. And we still have Republicans and saying, well, kids can't get coronavirus. They can't get it. And I got a doozy of a moron over running the Minnetonka School District that I've got to get to here in a little bit. But Gary is in Minneapolis. Gare Bear, thanks for calling. Welcome on in.
Hi, Matt. I got a diatribe here as usual. But if you, I heard you say to call in last week. I didn't get to it.
Well, I heard you were on MSNBC. Nicely done, my friend.
Yeah, I got a pen pal. And she seems to really be a nice kid.
Gary, you keep saying you're fans of me and the show, the station. We are huge fans of you, Gary. So thank
I'm
you for a lot.
Of you. I tell people to listen to your station every so often.
Well, that's going to only take the luster off the apple. But still,
want me to hear my usual diatribe or should I wait with it?
Go for it. Let me hear what you're upset about, Gary.
It's hard to figure out why people among the 99%. Support a party that hates the 99%, hates unions, hates minimum wages, probably having them at all like in the old days, privatizes our Medicare, Social Security, our military, and everything they can just to get in the hands of the profiteering people that support them, the big money. So Social Security, that's what we got to worry about in Medicare, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, and Gary, thank you very much. And by all means, you can call with your diatribes whenever you like, Gary. No, outside of millionaires and billionaires, there isn't a sector of our economy that is better off today than it was at the beginning of the Trump administration. Not a single sector. And sure, summer rentals and some cabins are going up because people are going local as opposed to traveling overseas. Yeah, but it doesn't offset the fact that there's a lot – you had things shut down for a long time. And when things really get horrible this fall, which they really will. When things get horrible this fall, no one's going to be going anywhere. So there isn't a sector across the state – mining, farming, anything – that's better off today than it was 4 years ago. And now you've got the Trump administration openly going after Medicaid, Social Security, Medicare, and they're trying to kill it. Don't fool yourselves. They want to kill it. And if they can kill it, meaning they can pull every senior in this country off Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security today, they wouldn't hesitate in a heartbeat because they'd look at you and say, well, you know, it's for the greater good that we don't tax people so that we have to get rid of this. And they would giggle and chortle, and they would be so overcome with you know, happiness that they were able to kill Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare that they wouldn't care. They wouldn't care. They would be high-fiving each other. You don't mean anything to them. And Gary's exactly right. You don't mean a thing to these people because they don't look at you as the human beings. They're just stupid rubes that keep them in office. So if you really want change, you have to – I mean, we put change into this state. We had 2 years of Democrats in charge of everything, and it led to the greatest frickin' economy Minnesota ever had. It did. You put Republicans in charge, and it's deficit spending, it's, you know, tax cuts for wealthy people only. Don't go on out there. They're not spending for education. They're not spending for broadband. They're not spending for health care. It's basically about how they can get as many taxpayer dollars into the wealthy people's pockets, because that's the people that are going to give them the lobbying jobs when they're done. This is a – if we don't fix this system, which means getting everyone's off their caboose and voting – well, you know, they're taunting you now. Hey, we don't care about you. We're going to kill all your benefits. And trust me, once again, there's a lot of Republicans who are going to say, I love this guy. I'm voting for him for the next 16 terms. But the reality is it's going to be a stark reality for most of us. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. When we do return, hopefully Steve Simon will be able to join us. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
I'm Nick Slavik, proprietor of the Nick Slavik Painting and Restoration Company. I've been a craftsman for 25 years. You'll not find someone who loves their job more than me. The process of painting your home could not be easier. Go to nickslavik.com, click on the button Paint My Walls or Paint My Cabinets. I'll personally be in contact with you to get an estimate, either in-home or a free virtual estimate. We move furniture, vacuum, sweep, dust, and put your home back the way we found it. We're not like other contractors.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Hi, this is Matt McNeil. Today, with the uncertainty going on, we're all looking to find a way to make our dollar go further. That's why I suggest your next vehicle is a Toyota from Rudy Luther Toyota. Not only do I have a newer Toyota, I also have a 2006 Sienna, and it still runs great. 14 years and 170,000 miles later. I love Toyotas, and they're made to last, and they have never let me down. And with maintenance from Rudy Luther, your vehicle will take care of you and save even more money with the Luther Advantage card with your vehicle purchase. Rudy Luther Toyota at 394 and 169 west of Minneapolis.
I'm Paula Overby, candidate for U.S. Senate. Americans want a nation we can feel proud of, but today, Americans are facing 40 million evictions while Congress votes to spend our tax dollars on needless wars. This is what a nation run by billionaires and party insiders has wrought upon America. With your support, we can take back our democracy and once again be proud of our nation. Donate today at paulaoverby.com. I'm Paula Overby. I endorse this message, and I thank you for your support.
Paid for by the Paula Overby for Congress Committee.
Indeed, Nightingale is the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. Stop on by, enjoy their fantastic food there. Help support the local businesses. As they're going through a real tough time, it's important that we keep making time to go out there, get some food out, help that local business. Help Nightingale on out, the eatlocalminnesota.com restaurant of the week. Steve Simon is kind enough to join us. He is the Secretary of State of the state of Minnesota. He is a very busy man, so I'm very honored that he has some time to chat with us today about the primary day tomorrow and voting by mail. Secretary Simon, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hey, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
My absolute pleasure. I want to start off with the astronomical number of requested ballots, mail-in ballots. Is it 637,463? That is apparently is way beyond anything we've ever had in the state, correct?
Oh, yeah, by leaps and bounds. I mean, it is huge. It's a huge number at this rate, and I don't know where the rate is going to go. It could go up or down. I predict it might even go up. We'll be at about 1.2 million by November 3rd, by Election Day. And just to put that number in perspective, we're expecting about 3 million voters, give or take, in Minnesota. So with the percentage, that is a good bit over a third. I think it's likely to climb even beyond that. But people are trying to tell us something, and we ought to listen to what they're trying to tell us, which is, this year, for some of the obvious reasons, they really are embracing voting from home.
Well, and it is such the no-brainer. I mean, you have a pandemic going on. Obviously, this is for a lot of people the safest way to be able to vote and have a voice in our country.
That's right. And look, I mean, normally the pitch for voting from home, which was already gaining popularity in Minnesota even before anyone had heard of COVID-19, normally the pitch is comfort and convenience, right? You can order the ballot to come to you. You can vote with your feet up. You can vote while you're listening to the radio, watching TV, eating a meal, whatever. But this year, there's the added dimension of, first, minimizing some risk. And secondly, there's a public service angle here. Everyone who votes from home this year is making the polling place just a little bit safer for those who choose that option tomorrow or on November 3rd. And I'm not just talking about the voters. I'm talking about the poll workers, too, who we rely on, 30,000 of them that it takes throughout the state to run an election. So let's not forget them.
The number of return ballots, 423,032. That's as of today. One of the reasons I got in touch with you today is I got back from coming up from up north and immediately was inundated with people that were concerned about the mail-in balloting. Overseas voters, people that are, you know, had sent in their ballot, they haven't been able to track it yet. Let's talk a little bit about this because there's been a lot of national stories about whether or not the mail-in ballots are getting to their destination on time like they usually would.
Right. Well, I am concerned by some of the reports that we're all seeing right now about slowdowns and allegedly intentional slowdowns, in some cases, of the U.S. Postal Service. Now, we've got that covered in Minnesota for a number of reasons, but it still is cause for all of us to plan and to plan for more time for all things, not just ballots, anything we're sending by mail to take a little bit of extra time, sadly. So, for example, the rule for the primary tomorrow is you can get your mail ballot back if it's postmarked by tomorrow but gets there by Thursday. Now, that might be too slim a margin for many people to stomach, depending on where you live, in which case my advice for any of your listeners who right now have a ballot and are thinking of sending in, I would say, if I were you, I would say instead of popping it in the mail and hoping it gets there by Thursday, I would say the best thing to do is to hand deliver it or have a friend or someone you trust hand deliver it to the place listed on the outside of the envelope. So you don't have to send it back by mail. You can get it there physically by other means. And at this point, on Monday before the Tuesday, that's what I would do.
I've actually, I don't want to accuse any of the local postal employees of anything nefarious, but I have noticed that there are even local bills I'm mailing in Hopkins to another Hopkins address seem to be taking 3 and 4 days as opposed to used to be overnight on a regular mail. And so, yeah, I think that is the safe bet. And once again, I want to repeat that, though, because as long as it's postmarked by tomorrow but received by Thursday, that's the only, if it comes in after Thursday, that vote will not be counted then, correct?
Correct.
All right. The in-person, obviously, and you brought up poll workers. Let's why not pander and praise them quite a bit here, because this has got to be one of the most intimidating elections on record, a major pandemic going on. You have a lot of people who have been there every election. They're going to show up again tomorrow. Are we anticipating a staffing problems or anything like that with the primary vote tomorrow?
No. Tomorrow, most places feel really good about it. There's usually not quite the demand, obviously, not quite the turnout, and so therefore not quite the staffing needs. The general election, though, we really have to keep our eye on. Look what happened in Wisconsin in early April. Look what happened in Georgia about 6-7 weeks ago. Some of the upheaval, even chaos in the polling place, was due to inadequate staffing, election judges, poll workers. Mm-hmm. And so we can't have that happen in Minnesota. We don't want that to happen, and we need to try to avoid that. Now, it's the cities and the counties that hire, train, and pay the election judges. But our office is trying to have their backs. And we are meeting in a series of meetings across the state, virtual meetings, of course, to provide some feedback, some advice, to share best practices on strategies to make sure those slots can be filled. And for your listeners' benefit, anyone who's interested in doing that job, in being an election judge and being a poll worker, two ways to do it. Number one would be to go to mnvotes.org. That's our website, mnvotes.org. You can fill out an interest form. But I would say the better way, even better than that website, is to contact a city hall. It doesn't even have to be your city hall. There's no geographic restriction. So if you live in Minnetonka and you hear that they need folks in Maple Grove, you can do that, or vice versa. So contact a city hall. I guarantee you they will be thrilled to get your phone call. Keep in mind, this is not a volunteer gig. This is very much a paid opportunity. You even get paid for the 2 hours of training that it takes, and that's it, only 2 hours, but you get paid for it. And it's a great way to help democracy and to backfill what we expect to be the need that comes out of some of the usual trusty election judges taking themselves out of circulation. No big secret to your listeners, I bet, from personal experience, that our election judges, our poll workers, tend to skew older. They tend to be disproportionately retirees or seniors, and they do a phenomenal job. But for some obvious reasons, some of them are just taking themselves out of the running this year, and we need to backfill or replenish their ranks. And so for your listeners, it's a great opportunity, a great way to help the election system and get paid. So I hope you'll consider doing that job.
And we should mention that, as you brought up, I mean, even if we have the pie-in-the-sky mentality towards the mail-in votes, that still means two-thirds of the voters in the state are planning on showing up and voting in person, potentially.
Right.
And so, you know, and that obviously is a major key on that. Going back to the mail-in votes, how is this going to get counted here? Because obviously that there have been some cases in some states where it's been a long time. I don't even know if we still know what happened in Iowa, but you have some states where you have the mail-in voting and it does seem to delay the results coming in. How is it going to work here in Minnesota?
Well, let me talk first about tomorrow, because it's right in front of us, the primary election. So just so your listeners know, election night is going to look a little different and feel a little different. We're used to a certain instant gratification on election night where we know, with some rare exceptions, what the outcomes are going to be. That might not be the case tomorrow night. And just so you know, that is by design. No one, when this happens, not if, but when there are delays, should say, oh, I wonder if someone screwed up or did my county or city fall asleep at the switch. No, this was by design. The legislature, wisely this last session, anticipating this tidal wave of requests to vote from home, gave counties and cities 2 extra days after the election to count all of these ballots. So what that means is that tomorrow night, election night, primary night, they will be able to report all the in-person totals, just like they would on any election day, and that will be the majority of the totals. They will be able to report all of the absentee ballots that they have in hand so far, but ballots are going to be coming in also the next day and the day after that on a Wednesday and Thursday. So on a rolling basis, we're going to know more, and finally we'll know everything as of Thursday night. Now, realistically, I think what that means is we'll probably know the vast majority of outcomes on Tuesday night, because we're going to know how many ballots are outstanding. And you can do the math, right? If candidate A is ahead of candidate B by 1,000 votes, and there are only 800 votes, absentee ballots outstanding, then you know, mathematically speaking, candidate A is going to win no matter what happens with the absentees. And I think that'll be the situation in the vast majority of primary contests. But you never know, right? The final result, the final word, won't be known until Thursday. And I just want to repeat, that's by design. That was written in law this year, one-time-only deal just for 2020 because of the extraordinary circumstances surrounding the election. So everyone's just got to sit back a little bit, be patient, understand that this is an extraordinary year, as you always already do, given your own lives. This is very on-brand for 2020, right? something that's just kind of going rogue and just unconventional. But that's the way it's going to be, and just understand that that's the way it was designed to be.
It does sound like some counties have already been a little proactive and said, in rural counties, if I'm not mistaken, have stated that their plans are to release numbers in the 2 days within the window that they've been given by the legislature. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. And it's really up to each county. Some counties, and we're encouraging counties to do this, which is, you know, don't just go dark for a couple of days. Give at least a daily update, or even more than that, say on Wednesday or on Thursday morning. But a county could decide to report what it has on Tuesday and then say, see you in 2 days, and just sort of go silent for a couple of days. They could do that. We're urging them not to do that for all the obvious reasons. I think transparency and just the public wanting to know. But look, some counties are really strapped, and in terms of just bandwidth and people power and staff, they're really getting slammed. And so it's not because they're trying to be secretive, I suspect. It's because they're just trying to do their job and keep their head down and then report the results when they get them.
Let's turn towards the general election. Obviously, a lot of stuff in your office is going to be very busy tomorrow. But once again, we do have a lot of concern that, you know, particularly on the federal level, the feeling is we're going to try to slow down the system, especially if it looks like the worse these numbers start looking for Trump. The feeling is, and we've already had it last Friday, there was quite a few people from the Postmaster General fired, a few people from the U.S. Postal Service that were in leadership positions. There has been a lot of reports of – I had a friend that messaged me this morning that he mailed in an overseas ballot in June – in late June, and it finally got there today, which, you know, it's the feeling is, okay, this is taking a long time. What are you doing to be proactive waiting for this in case there does seem to be some issues that start to crop up?
Yeah, so I've been in pretty close touch with Senator Klobuchar and our staff, with her staff, about exactly this issue. She has been appropriately vocal and aggressive on this, which I think is good. She's the one who can get answers, I think, at the federal level pretty readily, or I hope she will, I and a number of other secretaries of state from other states are actively right now trying to get a meeting with the new Postmaster General. You know, I want to, some extent, reserve judgment until he and his team have had a chance to answer our questions, and I hope they do. But I remain concerned, really concerned, about some of the reports we're seeing. I don't know if some of your listeners or if you saw over the weekend the Washington Post did a story about a Minneapolis housing high-rise that did not receive mail for, I think it was, 6 days in a row last week, right before an election, and there are numerous residents who have not yet received their absentee ballot. So to not receive mail for whatever it was, I think it was 6 days in a row, I just don't get it. I understand concerns about COVID and trying to be safe, but that seems excessive, a six-day total absence, a total blackout of any mail service. And it's not just about ballots. It's about, you know, pharmaceuticals and other really important things that people are sending and receiving by the mail. So that's totally unacceptable to me, not just in the election context, but in any context. And we need to find out what's going on. There have been public reports that the new Postmaster General has, for example, suspended or stopped overtime pay, which traditionally has been what the Postal Service relies on in a high-volume situation to get more mail out more quickly, and as a cost-saving measure has gotten rid of that with predictable results. And my worry, and not just mine but others, is that that backlog will just continue and get worse and worse and worse, mm-hmm. and by late October could have a real impact when it comes to ballots. Now, if and when that happens, I hope it doesn't, but if and when it does, our office, and I'm sure my colleagues around the country, will advise our voters exactly on that. You know, so our guidance for the primary election was just to be safe, mail it back a week in advance. Mm-hmm. The day may come in October when we're saying it, mail it back 8, 9, 10 days in advance. I hope we don't have to go there, but we'll go there if we need to go there.
Just for timeline's sake on the general election, when would early ballots be available, mail-in ballots be available?
September 18th.
September 18th.
So Minnesota and South Dakota are tied for the longest absentee period, 46 days before the election. So we two states will be the first to vote for President of the United States in the general election. You can vote in Minnesota starting September 18th.
I would make a very decent argument that the Postmaster General might try to slow down mail for 6 days, but 46 days is not going to fly. And so, a safe bit of advice is if you really want to make sure your ballot gets in, you basically, when early voting happens for the general election, get that ballot in right away.
Yeah, I mean, get it in as soon as you comfortably can, as soon as you know who you're going to vote for, I would say. And try to know who you're going to vote for as early as possible, is the way I would put it. Just to maximize the opportunity there to get that ballot in. Just so your listeners know, and this holds obviously for the primary and for the general election, we have a feature on our website that allows you to track your ballot. So you don't just have to put something in the mail and hope and say a little prayer that it gets there. You can know with certainty whether it has. So if you go to mnvotes.org, mnvotes.org, you'll see there it says track your ballot. And you just enter your information, and you can – I just did this a few days ago just to check on myself, and it'll tell you the date that it arrived, and it will give you the assurance in writing that it's being processed. So you don't have to wonder whether it's gotten there. You'll know the exact date it arrived.
MNVotes.org is one of the best dang sites you can actually go to because it gives you so much information. Obviously, for tomorrow, the main goal is that if you are going to vote in person, it will tell you exactly where you're going to be able to vote, correct?
That's right. And you know, one other thing, if I could, to those who plan to go in person tomorrow, you know, in good ways, it's going to look and feel different as well. Our office has spent the time and energy and money to purchase and distribute to all 3,000 polling places across Minnesota supplies and PPE. So when you go in there, you're going to see that the election judges are going to have high-grade, almost surgical-grade masks. There will be more regular-grade masks available for any voter who comes in without one. We're going to have hand sanitizer and pumps and wipes and rules of the road, which we drafted in conjunction with the Department of Health, that will govern things like cleaning the surfaces of polling stations after the use of every voter, things like social distancing, the use of pens and that kind of thing. So I just want folks to know that we're going to make the polling place as safe as it can possibly be. We're really doing our best to make sure the supplies are in there and it will be clean and safe.
All my best to you and your staff. Great job as always, Secretary. This is it's a Herculean effort whenever this comes up this year in this primary, in this general election. It's really going to be some heavy lifting. I am so glad you're in that office, my friend, because you're doing a great job. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me. We'll talk again. I hope
we will. We'll definitely talk before the general election. Steve Simon, Secretary of State for the state of Minnesota. I want to repeat the website here too, mnvotes.org, mnvotes.org. And a good reminder, Todd Colad sponsors us here at AM 950. He wants to remind everyone of mnvotes.org. It's a great place. Once again, you can find out who's on your ballot. You can find out where your polling place is, and you can find out all the rules and regulations. And if I can, electoral judges and poll workers, they are desperately needing both of them. To find out more information about how you can become one of those, go to mnvotes.org. It is democracy. This is how we do it. We're just going to do it a lot more safe in the near future. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Next Chapter Booksellers can help you find that perfect book. They have free home delivery within St. Paul for orders over $50 and free mail shipments within the U.S. for orders over $50. Call 651-225-8989 or visit nextchapterbooksellers.com.
Snap Construction wants to say thank you to all of the brave healthcare workers, first responders, police officers, and firefighters for putting themselves ahead of others every day. Your bravery is heroic, and to all of our fellow Americans, best wishes and health to you and your families from Snap Construction.
Hi, this is Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. If you're running for office or a grassroots ballot initiative, getting out door-to-door made a lot of sense before coronavirus. Progressive candidates historically win elections with one-to-one voter contact, door-knocking, and by organizing. With coronavirus, candidates and ballot initiatives need to pivot and recalibrate with a digital marketing strategy to provide one-to-one voter contact and organizing opportunities. An effective digital strategy will likely determine if your race goes blue this year or whether you're singing the blues. So, if you want to be singing Hail to the Chief on Election Day, Social Media MN can help. For a hassle-free consultation, contact us today at 763-244-4058. That's 763-244-4058. Or visit us online at socialmediamn.com. That's socialmediamn.com.
Hi, I'm Alicia Luther-Toms, Certified Financial Planner with RBC Wealth Management. You might think you have to give up performance to invest responsibly, but that simply isn't true. Responsible investing can actually have a positive impact on performance. We will work with you to come up with a strategy that matches your values. This is Alicia Luther-Toms at 612-770-4460 or alicia.luther.toms@rbc.com.
RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I did want to mention one last thing here because a lot of parents are like myself. We're now starting to get the idea of what's going to be like to go back to school. Now, my kid's school has announced they're going to be remote learning at least for 2 to 4 weeks, it sounds like, before they begin. They're hopefully going to include a hybrid option here. But the superintendent of Minnetonka Public Schools is a Dennis Peterson. Peterson introduced his recommendations for the school board in reopening the district under a hybrid model, one that allows for some in-person teaching, some distance learning. Peterson stated no students should be forced to attend school in person, that some teachers won't want to come back and others may not want to come back due to their own health risks. Those who can and do will experience a unique change to the teaching styles. I mean, nothing unusual here. Peterson, whose comments drew attention to the Minnesota Reformer in his remarks, Peterson seemed to question the worth of sending students home in the first place. Quote, COVID is spreading outside the schools. This closure in the spring was intended to keep school-age children from infecting grandma and grandpa and vulnerable parents and other family members. How did that work? We still have thousands of grandmas and grandpas get it and get ill, and many passed away. The system failed to recognize that students who are not in school go to other places, and that others in our society who are not careful about their interactions with other people, family members, or students, get the virus to those engagements. Basically, he doesn't. You could just condemn the risky behavior that happens outside of this during a pandemic. He basically, the schools were doing the right thing. We didn't have a massive a massive amount of testing with kids when we were trying to keep the kids safe. Thousands of deaths from other related issues caused by students staying at home, he said. The research is clear that far more students suffer from the closure than from coronavirus. What are you talking about? The reasons people might not have suffered from the coronavirus is because the schools were closed, you idiot. Jeez. Other countries successfully negated the virus and did not close at Peterson, but you know, also they shut down their countries dramatically more than we did. He says that the flu, he then goes on to imply the flu is dangerous, more dangerous than the coronavirus, which is just laughable. Feels like sometimes the media tends to emphasize those students that scare people and increase concerns about the threat of the virus. Media has a mission to encourage people to stay away from each other and stay away from business and schools. Yeah, because it's a pandemic, you idiot. But then he goes, there are probably more risks to our students and their families from the flu than there is from the virus. That's an exact quote from him. Apparently someone that didn't like that was the head of the Education Minnesota Teachers Union, Denise Sprecht, who basically took him to task. I'll post that story a little bit later on. Minnetonka, what the heck, dude? Where'd you get this clown as your superintendent? And by the way, when are you going to give the bell and the wheel of the USS Minneapolis back to the city of Minneapolis? Remember, some clown from the VFW over there stole those things and gave them to Minnetonka High School, and we are honoring the veterans by allowing football players to put their sweaty bodies all over the bell in some kind of ritual, I guess. They get to ring the bell. Because they bench-pressed 150. Just as big of a sacrifice as the USS Minneapolis. Give them, for God's sake, someone clean up Minnetonka High School. Get the bell and the wheel back and get this clown some information. Because he clearly doesn't seem to understand a lot of things. Let's get out of here today. Let's, Cher Lloyd, let's hit this here. I think we got Cher. There you go. Want you back. We are back tomorrow. Have a good rest of your Monday. Till tomorrow. See ya.